Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Okay, Josh, I'll tell you what. You take care of Adam and Eve.
I'll try and do it without falling asleep. I'm fucking tired as hell.
Go on.
AdamandEve.com. Go there. Use the promo code STATIC, and you get 50% off of a single item, free shipping in the United States, 3 free DVDs, and a free mystery gift for using the promo code STATIC at AdamandEve.com. And people, you need to go
okay,
there.
Okay, hang on. How many sales did we have on our last monthly report?
Take a guess. I know you know the answer, but guess anyway.
Two.
Nope, go lower.
Zero.
Higher.
1/8.
Higher.
One.
Yes.
One. One sale.
We need you guys to help spread the codes around, okay? If you see a forum or a place where you can spam the codes, help us out a little bit.
Thank you very much for that. But, because of this, and because I've had a couple of people ask, we just, and by the way, when I say just, you just saw me do it. And
I didn't see shit, and I'm not testifying to anything.
Email the code off to our webmaster, and hopefully she'll get this up and running. Hopefully she'll get this up and running by the time this airs. We are doing at 1201beyond.com, Josh's little website, we are doing an Amazon affiliate program, which means that if you're going to shop at Amazon, first go to 1201beyond.com, click on one of our banners or ads or links or the widget in there, and they're real easy to see. And then just shop like you normally would at Amazon, and we get a little kickback. It's just a small percentage. But
and it costs you nothing.
Yeah,
it
costs you nothing, and if you're going to shop at Amazon anyway, then it's a great way to do it. Plus, you help Josh and I out, and we would very much appreciate it. But in order to do that, in order for us to get credit and all of that, you've got to go to 1201beyond.com and click on one of the banners that Josh is very kindly letting us put up there to try and...
And since we're being whores, we should also point out, you can also listen to this show as well as What the Fuck and Radiodrome at StitcherRadio.com as
exactly.
Well. Yeah, you were no downloading, no syncing. It's right there, the newest episode, and I think you can go back a few.
Streams right through.
You know, mm-hmm. And you just click, oop, boop, right there.
And, and
I just hit my fucking knee. Ouch!
Your pain amuses me. You are tired, man. You're
told you I slept like shit, man.
What caused you to sleep like shit?
Just couldn't
bad
sleep.
Bad dreams, or you couldn't
I had
wake up,
weird
or?
Dreams. I should probably stop watching movies before I go to sleep, because you get this weird conglomeration of like the zombie movie you watched at 4 p.m, and then I was watching the commentary for New Jack City, so it was like a black gangster zombie thing with like rainbows and bananas and horses and it just, you know, all that weird dreamy shit. And
why do I see that as the next Simon Pegg project? Exactly as you described it. All right.
If he did, he's stealing it from me.
Is we're going to go into London and we're going to have this urban gangster weird zombie shit with rainbows and ponies. Because I could see him doing that.
And I've been playing a lot of Saints Row the Third, so I've got just the weird sexual shit too. Because, you know, in that game, you got giant dildo bats.
I was
going to
say,
all
are
this.
You,
and,
are you, have you been beating people with giant purple penises?
Yeah, and the character I play, a woman completely with blue skin, with a giant mohawk, and the biggest tit size possible, and no clothes to allow for streaking points.
I'm going to borrow that game when you're done. not because of your character.
That's not even the tip of the bizarre iceberg that this game... I mean, have you ever seen a game where you're actually in a gunfight race to get away with human ponies carrying rickshaws with dildos up their asses and ball gags in their mouth, and you got to shoot their ponies that are trying to rickshaw behind you while the bad guys are shooting at you?
I have got to borrow this game when...
It's just absolutely batshit insane.
Sweet.
I mean, the opening scene, and this is not a spoiler because it's the opening scene that was in the trailer, is, you know, you're the Third Street Saints and you're famous for being gangsters. You know, you have costumes and bobbleheads and posters and your own TV show and stuff. So the opening scene is your characters dressed up in Halloween costumes of your characters robbing a bank. They're like, wait, you're robbing a bank as yourselves? Yeah, who would have ever suspected us robbing a bank as us?
That's actually quite brilliant.
It is. So I've been playing a lot of Saints Row the Third. But I wanted to talk to you tonight about what happens when, and it doesn't have to be like a movie franchise or a book franchise, anything, when you start to see it on the decline and why there's usually no way back. So, once you start going down that slope, and I hope our show is not considered like that. I hope people aren't going, oh, Christ, this is, you know, this is meta because they're talking about their own show going down right before episode 100.
I don't know. I don't know exactly what's... I know that you were planning on jumping a shark on episode 100. Literally jumping over a shark.
Maybe a mud shark.
Actually, I think... You know what's funny is I think Dawn has a little plushy shark, so we could literally jump a shark at episode 100.
I have a plush shark in my car. I got it from the dollar store, and it's named Bruce. And real movie nerds will get the reference to Bruce.
Well, and it's not Finding Nemo, is it?
No, it's not.
In fact, that's where Finding Nemo the name.
The first time my wife took it off the dashboard and threw it in the back seat, I'm like, don't throw Bruce. She goes, Bruce? Why the fuck is it named Bruce? And I explained it to her, and she's like, that's stupid, but all right. So, because I'm just looking at, like, there are magazines I used to buy, and there are shows I watched, and there are podcasts I've listened to, and, you know, not to get too, you know, I'm not trying to be insulting, because you've admitted this on the air. Like, at what point in, you know, at SaterCast, you just realized it was over, and you just kind of kept going? You know, that you realized the show was, in your words, declining, and you kept it going for whatever reason.
SaterCast hit the wall hard. It was going strong and it was going well, and we had 200 and some episodes, but and I forget exactly what episode it was, but you can hear it. The people on the podcast are starting to hate one another.
Well, I hope we're not at that point. Like I said, we're right before, this should be episode 98, so we're right about to our 100th episode.
Right, not yet. We're not there yet.
And I don't think we've hit that point yet.
No, but no, you can seriously hear it on the show, and I think it went on like two or three episodes after that, and then I did a couple of special episodes with like guest hosts because we were trying to switch it up and find chemistry elsewhere, and just didn't. And
well, why do you think it's so hard to come back from a decline like that? Like, let's take for an example a magazine that we all used to read, Fangoria. Magazine used to be so good, and then right around 1998, they just seemed to just give up. And you know, they said the internet's taken. We don't have any exclusive photos anymore because they're all over the internet. We can't get any exclusive interviews anymore. The internet's killing us. We're just not even going to try anymore. And there's this tiny little attempt now to bring the magazine back from the brink, but is too much damage been done? Can you get to the point where too much damage has been done to really make a comeback?
That's part of it is when, you know, I mean, if anybody is going to read Fangoria, it's going to be you and I. Or at least you.
But not now. Well, not the current Fangoria.
I know, not now. But see, that's the thing. When your fans, your biggest fans, look at you and go, okay, all right, that's not, you're not doing what I started
when all your memories are how good that used to be.
Yeah.
That's when you kind of got to look at yourself, and you get certain arrogant ones that go, well, fuck you. We're not that anymore. We're something totally different, and we don't care if you like it anymore.
Playboy,
I mean, I have issues with their binding. I hate that fucking square-bound shit. I cannot stand square-bound magazines.
Okay.
Because as me as a collector.
In order to read it, you actually...
You have to basically tear the magazine apart to read the fucking thing, which that's an issue right there.
Wired does that now. There's a few. Yeah.
I don't understand why magazines go square-bound.
But anyway.
But Yeah, Playboy, they still got good articles, but let's face it, who the fuck buys Playboy for the women anymore? I know how sad that sounds, but who the fuck buys it for the centerfolds anymore?
Well, the truth is the, you know, print nudie magazines in general, anything in print is, it's kind of a moot point when you have a little box on your desk that will bring you all the porn in the world and everything you're looking for and more.
Well, a perfect example would be Hustler. I don't understand. And I mean, maybe there is some, you know, ad reason for it or some big, you know, corporate reason for them doing this. But you look at the magazine covers from the 70s and the 80s. And yes, they had naked women on them, but they were very provocative covers with, like, you know, the woman in the meat grinder or the bush shot of the woman wearing the American flag panties. You know, and that's the only cut thing, or you've got the woman crucified on a giant cross and, you know, all this stuff. And you had these very unique looking covers. Now every issue is just a pretty girl on the cover in a pose. And you go, that's boring. That's, you know, the 70s and 80s, you had covers that were eye catching. Now it's just provocative. Meh.
And not only were they eye catching, not only did they have beautiful women on them, but they were controversial in some way.
Oh, yeah. Usually. I mean, like, I thought Penthouse was making a comeback. They had a cover about 2 months ago that was really striking. The way they used the logo was like in a purple neon, and the girl was dressed in very dark clothes. Because, you know, Penthouse doesn't show nudity on the cover.
Right, right.
She was dressed in a dark outfit with a black and blue background that just made her pop right out of the image. And I went, oh, you know, the way it's composed, it's eye-catching. And then the next month was just a pretty girl in a stupid pose like on a beach. And you go, okay, I thought you guys were trying here for a moment.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, we could talk about skin mags in general and the decline of skin mags and everything like that, but you know, the in general, you can, when your fans give up on you, which I hope our fans haven't on this show, and from the feedback I've gotten that I at least have a diehard few that haven't.
Oh yeah, and, we've got a pretty decent listenership, and
yeah,
you know, and there's going to be smartasses that go, well, you guys are declining, so it's funny that you did this time.
Yeah, record. Exactly. And then there's always gonna you guys sucked from the beginning. You can't decline.
You can't go lower than zero.
That's right. But the fact is, when you start losing that core group, for instance, one of our fans' name that I talk to quite often, his name is Francis.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's a nice guy. I don't know if you've talked to him or not, but
I've seen him post in some things. I don't think I've actually talked.
Nice guy. In fact, we've inspired him to start a show of his own on video games, and I'm going to let him get rolling on that, and then I'll give him a little bump. But Francis, if I ever lose him as a fan, or if he ever stops listening to the show, I know we're in trouble. And I think that there comes a point when you could get big enough that you don't notice this core group, you know, that, my God, they're staying in droves, you know, my God, they're leaving in droves. It's, there may come a point when you just don't notice. For instance, you mentioned Fangoria. Interesting magazine, very niche as far as what it covers, and it used to be the word on Hollywood horror.
Well, right. And to me, and a lot of people, honestly, they destroyed their name. So, like we talked earlier, too much damage had been done. They destroyed their name with their shitty radio show, their idiotic attempt to get their own cable channel that blew up in their face, their horrible movie production line, their terrible comic line, their all, you know, the 900 different spin-off magazines they tried that were canceled after 4 or 5 issues. And so that name just carries no weight anymore.
So what happened?
To me, there's just too much damage has been done.
See, that was one of their problems. And I've seen this in more than one place, especially with such a niche thing like that. It's when, you know, you expect Fangoria Movie Productions or Fangoria's cable channel. You expect it to be for fans by fans.
Well, I mean,
you expect it. You know, this is a group of people that have spent their entire
existence,
career of publication, doing this one thing and critiquing others for doing that one thing wrong. My God, there's no way they could fail. They know exactly what to do and how to do it right. And when you don't take your own advice.
Well, and see, like, you know, they only made 4 movies before their production company got destroyed, and our friend Hank Carlson worked on 3 of those. But they made a really bad decision right off the bat. Now, it's not a bad movie, okay? But Fangoria, what's the one word that pops into your mind when you hear that?
What?
Horror.
Yes.
So, let's make our first movie a sci-fi movie. Wait, what?
Huh?
Yeah, because the first movie they made was Mind Warp, which was a Matrix-style sci-fi flick. And you kind of go, that's not what I expected out of Fangoria. Out of Fangoria Productions, Fangoria Magazine Presents, why'd you make a sci-fi flick? It just, you know, right there, I think that was a bad business decision right off the bat. And the movie probably failed because people were not wanted to go see a Fangoria-made sci-fi movie.
Yeah, it's really confusing. What is the sci-fi equivalent to Fangoria?
It used to be Starlog, which was published by the same company. Starlog came first. Fangoria was technically owned by Starlog Enterprises.
Okay.
So Starlog would have been the science fiction equivalent.
That would have made sense. Starlog Magazine Presents.
Mind Warp, to
think of it, I remember Starlog from working at the U.S. bookstore. We had tons of them. Anyway... But yeah, you know, that could be red flag number one. We've spent our entire professional careers working in this one niche. Let's go work in another one. No.
Well, and then the last thing we'll do on magazines. Do you remember Cinema Fastique magazine?
Kinda. I can picture the font, but that's about it.
Okay, it was a all genre magazine, you know, horror, sci-fi, action, adventure, anything, a nerd or geek would probably get into for movies.
Okay.
And it was always ad free. So no ads with a higher cover price, but with no ads, you got all content. And every issue, with the exception of like 2 or 3, had a beautiful custom painted cover. Then you could tell right around the early 2000s when they gave up. They started putting ads in, didn't drop the cover price, and started going with photo covers. So it'd just be Jennifer Garner on Alias on the cover instead of a painted Jennifer. And you just started going, oh, this is not good. They just gave up, and there's no going back after this, is there? They even changed the name from Cinema Fastique to CFQ. And you just go, all right, you guys tried to make it something different.
Yeah.
You failed so hard, you can't go back to Cinema Fastique.
In fact, I can think of a magazine that's going through that right now.
Which is?
Mad.
I haven't bought a Mad since like the 80s, man.
Yeah, I know. And I remember, you know, when we went up to my parents used to go up to a lake cottage, and we'd spend a weekend up there or something, you know, one TV for 2 households and one telephone that was kind of down the road a ways, and you could really get away.
You were sort of off the grid-ish.
Yeah, you get away from it all. And one of the things whenever we went out to buy supplies for this, you know, like...
You'd grab a magazine.
Cokes and food and stuff like that. Mom used to pick up a Mad magazine, and that was... I associate Mad magazine with the place and the good memories of the place, and if I had had a chance to clean out that trailer, I could tell you that there's quite a collection of Mad magazines up there, but they're gone now. But, you know, it was always associated, flipping through that Mad magazine. Was it hilariously funny? Was it amazingly wonderful magazine?
Not really. But the memories
were there. But I remember that magazine well because they had a few recurring things. They always had the Don... Oh, people are shouting at their radio right now. It's Don Blah, you idiot. The guy that always did the artwork with the really crazy sound effects.
Yeah.
But you had that, and then you had the lighter side of, and a couple other things. But not a single ad to be seen. If there was an ad,
it was a parody.
And if there was, and higher cover price than most other magazines at the time.
But see, when you get ad free, I'm willing to go. I'm willing to do
exactly.
That.
But it was really, really good. I picked up a Mad magazine last year.
Like every other fucking page an ad?
There were ads all over the place in it. And on part of the reason why they never used ads before was they said, we're a parody magazine. We can't advertise a product on one page and parody it on the next.
Right.
They stopped. Well, they stopped doing the parody ads. They stopped doing a lot of their parody stuff, and they started showing real ads. And they had, out of morbid curiosity, I went back the next month or so and picked up the next issue and just read through it. Recurring strips that were just stupid and horrible. A lot of their humor has gone to the gross out.
Go back to our episode of The Decline of Humor.
Yeah, it's always been, you know, Mad Magazine has always had some of those little ew, yuck moments, but
it was never gross out.
It was never, you know, over the top gross out. And they've gone to a lot of that. They've gone to this weird, obscure art form every now and then. And I was really upset to find that the fold-in at the back was an ad. The famous Mad fold-in at the very back of the magazine.
Which has always been there.
Which has always been there and probably always will be. Was an advertisement.
That's got it. Well, speaking of advertisements, IFC, Independent Film Channel. There's no going back after how much damage IFC has done to themselves.
Well, they're no longer independent films.
Well, really. They've always walked that weird line. You know, a lot of real independent films, and then when you see like Blade Runner on there, and you go, no, House of a Thousand Corpses. Made by Universal on the Universal backlot. No. Yeah. But no, the whole thing that not only is half their lineup now TV shows, you know, they've got Portlandia and they show reruns of Malcolm in the Middle and Arrested Development. And it's like, okay. And then commercials. Yes, they still show uncut widescreen movies with a commercial break every 4 minutes.
I don't
want to be watching The Devil's Rejects and every 4 minutes have a Kit Kat commercial. Come on. It seems like it's always Kit Kat or insurance. But it's just like, sorry, IFC, you're dead to me. That decline, you cannot come out of that, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and don't get me wrong. I mean, just at the beginning, we talked about putting banner ads on your website.
There's a difference between survival ads
and we have obviously been advertising for Adam and Eve for a while, but we do it at the top, we get it over with, and then we give you the content.
Yeah, and we don't stop like Doug Walker halfway through the thing and go, hey, commercial!
Exactly. And once again, this episode of Lost in the Static is brought to you by Amazon.com. Don't go to 1201 Beyond.
Stop it.
Click on the banner.
I know that was meant to be a joke, but stop it. I
know.
It.
But the you know, that's usually, I understand that in today's economy, you have to sell, you almost have to sell ads to stay alive, unless you're an HBO or a PBS.
HBO still, okay, what the hell, HBO, home box office, our entire lineup at any given time are 9 different TV shows and marathons of our TV shows. You're hard-pressed to actually find a fucking movie on HBO anymore.
I don't know.
They're just a TV show channel now, and it's like, okay, fine, but that's not HBO. Why not make HBO TV? That's where The Sopranos, that's where Game of Thrones, that's where these shows should go. Well, HBO is about fucking movies.
No, well, you know, HBO is about their original series now. They at least have HBO 2 and HBO 3,
which rerun the TV shows
6, 7, 8, 9 through infinity.
HBO plus also has this weird, weird thing
that is going to español.
No, but they got this weird corporate idea that is going to hurt them more and more in the future. That for whatever reason they will not back off of, because Showtime and Cinemax and the Movie Channel have all embraced this, and that is widescreen. HBO will still to this day not show a movie in widescreen.
They do pan and scan?
Yet everything is full frame. And you go, why? The Movie Channel shows movies widescreen. Cinemax shows movies widescreen. Showtime shows movies widescreen. HBO still has this. Well, people like the whole TV filled up. I don't understand why HBO is the biggest one, but, and they will not do widescreen.
Okay, so signs that you're on the decline, you start moving away from you.
Whatever your niche was.
Whatever your niche was, you start moving away from that. Hello, IFC, HBO, Fangoria, MAD. So that's a huge sign. You start losing your core group of fans, which, again, maybe a little bit easier for us to track either here or like we did on SaterCast. Jason Oblivion, stop listening to SaterCast after a while. And that kind of told me
something's wrong.
Something's wrong.
Well, I actually just thought of this. And just the opposite of what you said is also a good-ass reason for decline. When you refuse to change when necessary, like HBO, or if Mad Magazine had been the same Mad now in today's culture with that same very 1970s-style jokes that they had even into the 90s, you'd go, okay, they're stagnant because they're refusing to change. I'm not talking about a product evolving. But you either have to evolve and stay true to what you were, or not. You know, it's sort of a very delicate balance. Does that make sense?
It. What you're looking for in a magazine is to evolve from an ape-like, more ape-like human into a modern human, as opposed to a more ape-like human into a dolphin.
Weird analogy, but okay.
Weird analogy, but it works. You know, it's okay to evolve, but follow that logical path instead of veering way off into left field.
Well, and then you also have things that are so clearly not as good as they were, and they've been declined for a long time. And there's that arrogant, like I talked about before. We don't care. We're a different product now, and we like the current product we are. And I'm looking at The Simpsons. The current producers of The Simpsons love the new style of the show that everybody hates. I don't understand it. You talk to any Simpsons fan, they can't stand the new stuff. But the producers are like, well, we're a different animal now. It's a different environment. Basically, they admit Seth MacFarlane changed everything. We can't do 1994-era Simpsons stuff because that won't work today, which I disagree with. So we have to do the gross-out jokes. We have to have a gag every 4 seconds or we're going to lose the audience. We have to have the nonsensical plots. It's... No one likes the current Simpsons. And I don't, you know, the only reason I still watch it is that weird conspiracy theory I have against with the universe. I've watched every single episode all the way from the Tracy Ullman show. And I see it every time. And I just know the first time I miss one, that's going to be when the universe throws me a good one. And it's going to be something that'll be like that itchy and scratchy that'll never be rerun. So I have to keep watching it to make sure that they still suck. I know that makes no sense, but it makes sense in my mind, okay?
Ladies and gentlemen, Josh.
That's the way my mind works, people.
Speaking of which, I'll talk to you about this after the show. I apologize. one of the shows that I think has evolved well, and if you go back to the old episodes of it, you could tell that they weren't in their swing. But nowadays, I think that their episodes still hold up. You want to talk about a show that evolved well? Is South Park.
You and I hate that
show.
Right?
I know you're not a South Park fan.
Even the South Park guys, I was reading an Entertainment Weekly at the dentist's office. They were asked what they think the worst episode of South Park is, and they said anything from the first 4 seasons.
Yeah, and that's a show that caught people in one era, you know, that 90s humor. And stuff like that, and evolved in a logical form. And like I said, I know you're not a South Park fan, but if you find a South Park fan, a lot of them think that the South Parks now are considerably better than they used to be. And they hold up. The older shows, not so much. But that's a logical evolution of a show.
Well, but then what do you make of the that sort of Simpsons arrogance that we're a different type of show now? The Simpsons has evolved into a totally different show than it was in 1994 when it was arguably the prime. That sort of arrogance of screw the old style, we prefer the new. Well, when the fans don't, though.
See, that's one thing that I can look at them and I go, all right, that's their right to change it. That's their right to make it a different product than it was.
But they shouldn't be called out for their arrogance?
But it's also your right to no longer like the show. And it's your right to no longer watch it.
But like I said, they shouldn't be called out for that arrogant, screw the old stuff, we prefer the new?
No, they should be called out, but that's what I'm saying. It then becomes that Simpsons fan's right to look at it and go, this is not the show I enjoyed, I'm shutting it off, or I'm watching something else. And, you know, that's what a lot of fans are doing. Unfortunately, in the case of the Simpsons and stuff, they've picked up new fans. You know, people that are now old enough that they see The Simpsons on the air and they don't remember when The Simpsons weren't on the air.
Well, you also have people like my brother, who we talked about before. He goes back and looks at, like, the 1989 to 1994 era, and he goes, they're unwatchable. They go sometimes 2 minutes without a fucking joke. He goes, they're boring.
Yeah,
and I'm like, no, those were good. You don't need blah, blah, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. For all the jokes, you don't need that.
Okay, you feel that way, I'll admit that, but maybe younger kids today don't.
That's sick.
You know, maybe they don't have. I mean, this is the. You're kind of off the decline. You see The Simpsons in decline. Other people see The Simpsons, like your brother, as being better. So, what I think now is, and yeah, you're right. The Simpsons switched, and they lost one core group of fans, and they picked up a younger demographic. Is that good? I don't know. Is it bad? I haven't the faintest idea. But
it is what it is. Let's change gears a little bit. Let me ask you this. What about when bands do the same thing? When bands just keep this decline going and every album is worse than the previous album. And first of all, you got to ask yourself, why do I keep buying it?
You mean, you know, like if Kiss makes a disco album or something?
I've never been a Kiss fan, so it's probably not a good topic to ask for me because I hated their disco album, I hated their metal albums, so.
Okay. Well, imagine if Jello Biafra got into a jazz group.
Okay, I'd have issues with that. Yes.
See, and that's. There are certain bands that can experiment and that can play with a genre. And I don't know what it is about them that enables them to do that. Bands like Radiohead. There's a distinct Radiohead sound, but they
suck,
can...
Suck? The sound of suck?
No, but they can play with different genres. And Sting. Sting can go from rock to jazz to adult contemporary, and I wouldn't doubt it if at some point Sting comes out with a metal album. He's one of those artists that's flexible enough that there will still be a distinct Stingness to it.
Well, I'm talking about something like look at... I heard... something from Dookie the other day from Green Day's, you know, debut album on the radio. And I went, God, they used to be, I loved that album. They used to be so good. See, and then to me, every album got worse and the album sales reflected it too. And yet they persist on this. No, this is the band we are now. Why can't people like us now?
Oh God, it's a ranty episode for you, isn't it?
I'm sorry.
You need to.
Calm down.
Calm down for just a moment. When it comes to bands, what I think happens is shows like American Idol. People look at American Idol and they look at what, you know, comes out of that karaoke contest and they call it musicianship. And it sells to that young teenage, preteen teenage demographic and sales go through the damned roof. Other music producers see this and they go, oh, wow, we need to capture that sound. And you've got bands like Green Day going, wait, we're kind of a post grunge punk band. What are you talking about? And they're like, no, add synths and add a hook. And then pretty soon you've got Green Day introducing their song with unts, 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 unts. And I think that it's people trying to figure out what other people want that screws up with it. And the band...
So are you saying basically that they decide to sell out?
They lose track of what they originally were and what they originally wanted. And money can do that. Money can do that, and you know you have a few successful albums based on your core sound, and maybe your next core doesn't sell quite as much. But gosh, that money's nice. So you start listening to consultants, and you'll see.
You and I have worked in TV. Consultants never have any good ideas. They always wreck everything.
Exactly.
Don't they?
I was about to say, you and I have seen this in TV. Consultants will come in and change everything about a station. Look at the Fox affiliate here. It was consultants that decided to get rid of their floor crew and go robotics. It was consultants that decided that it was time for them to go HD. Okay, good idea, consultants. I'll give you that one. It was consultants that changed their set that got their new weather.
HD was going to be coming no matter what.
Yeah, I
know. They just...
That changed their set. They changed their weather graphics. They changed some of their talent. And they changed attitude. I have no other way to, you know, somebody gave the anchors notes and the anchors went, okay, and they changed who they were into what they are now.
The delivery style.
Yeah, the delivery style. And, you know, I know from experience that it was consultants that did all of that. The reason consultants do all of this is so that you'll pay them to be consultants to change something. They have to come in and change something. And there's a lot of people and that now, since all these changes have happened, that Fox News and local news in general is on the decline. And the reason it's on the decline is because they are no longer delivering what people originally had the local news for. You remember back in, you know, the 80s, local news was... actual hard-hitting, locally-based stories. Stuff that freaking mattered.
Mattered to the viewership, to the viewing audience.
And then you compare it to today, and it's filled with celebrity news and softball news and water-skiing squirrels.
National stories.
And
with a 24-hour news cycle and Fox News and MSNBC and Current and CNN, they can handle what Obama did today unless he's in your area.
Well, even back in the 80s, late 70s and through the 80s, when you would have your local news stories covering, your local news team covering local news, and then right after that came Dateline or...
Nightly News with Tom Brokaw,
or you know, the CBS Evening News, or whatever it happens to be, and that, you know, they went, okay, there's national, there's world, here's our local. Concentrate on local, and they stopped doing that, mainly because people stopped watching.
Right.
But
let's swing back to music real quick. I want to think I'm not going to rant about how much I think Metallica is a total sellout, but I have to use them as an example. When Metallica did Enter Sandman and they did the Black Album, and the whole impetus for that was, we want to be on the radio. We want to be on MTV. Okay. Metallica at that point had decided to sell out because they said, we're sick of being an incredibly popular but arguably underground band. We want to be on the radio. We want to be on MTV. So we're going to cut our hair. We're going to, you know, shave. We're going to dress nice. And we're going to start making music videos and change our sound to be more radio friendly. Well, then you saw all the other metal bands that saw the success Metallica got. And so they said, we're going to start changing our sound to be more radio friendly. We're going to start shaving and cutting our hair. And we're going to try and get on MTV. And not only do you have the sellout, but you can pinpoint right there. That's when they started the decline. When they started making the music to fit what MTV and radio people wanted and not what their listeners and fans wanted.
More precisely, to fit what they believed, what MTV and the people in charge of radio programming believed their listeners wanted.
Hell, speaking of MTV, we can pinpoint when they started to go down, when they said music. What is that? What the M in MTV stands for?
Real World.
Yeah, but they still had a lot of music videos then. World might have been the start.
Real World was the start, though, because they saw...
Wasn't Singled Out before that?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Singled Out didn't get very good ratings.
And then they had Remote Control, which had nothing to do with music.
Didn't get good ratings.
Dude, it lasted 7 fucking seasons.
Yep, didn't get good ratings.
Then why did it last 7 fucking seasons?
I have no idea what the magic was, but I'm not saying it was a bad show, because I thought Remote Control was thoroughly enjoyable.
Try downloading a couple from the torrent site and watch them again. You'll change your mind.
Mind you, I haven't seen them since they were on the air.
I watched a couple a few months ago. Not so good. They're not nearly as good as I remembered.
But, you know, they didn't get good ratings. What started to get good ratings in the non-music side of it was Real World. And by consequence, the stuff that kind of surrounded it, that Liquid Television and...
Road Rules.
Road Rules, that, which...
was sort of a spinoff of...
Yeah, it was a direct spinoff.
Okay. I'd never watched it, so...
Yeah, it was a direct spinoff of Real World. But you had things like Liquid Television and the other
Dead at 21.
At the best, it was... Music was kind of in the wings of it somewhere.
It was tangentially related.
Thank you, tangentially. That's what I was looking for.
I could see your eyes were darting like you were thinking, there's a word. I want a certain word.
Stupid English, no good brain tonight. there was stuff that was... And then, like I said, reality television happened, and I hate to tell you this, folks, but it started on MTV.
Cops predates... the MTV stuff. Cops is arguably the first, you know, taking out like That's Incredible and stuff like that, which were really more just freak shows.
Well, those were the Tosh.0s of their day.
Right. but Cops was really the first reality show.
Yeah,
so
okay, I'll give you
if
that.
You, if you want to talk about that, you got to go back to 89 with that.
With Cops. Okay. Well, non-cops. Stupid people getting arrested. The first... the first reality sitcom or sit drama or sit tragedy or whatever it was, the first
deal attempt where, at that, yeah,
the first one with reoccurring characters and stuff like that, and with a true story arc that you can follow, was Real World.
Well, and then okay, let's go with books. Have you noticed, and I think it'd be unfair of us to just pick on Twilight here, although we have to bring up Twilight as being a definite decline in reading, because Harry Potter got kids to read.
Yeah.
Twilight got kids to read shit.
Yeah, okay. All right, there have always been great highs and horrible lows, Stephen King, when it comes to...
Do you mean King as a high or a low or both?
Yes.
okay.
And, you know, I mean, just look at Stephen King. He has had amazingly good book, Under the Dome. Great book.
I haven't read that.
It's somehow an invisible dome just pops up over this city.
Did Mr. Burns do it?
Kind of, sort of. But, you know, incredible book, Under the Dome. You've got the Dark Tower series, which I... haven't followed real well, but I know fans of the Dark Tower series, and they are rabid fans of the Dark Tower series. Then you've got books like Christine.
Which is fucking boring. Yes.
And you've got, and I hate to say it, but Pet Sematary.
I've never read the book for that.
Boring and predictable. The Stand. It was kind of in the middle. You know,
I haven't read the book for that one. I've only read the first like 9 chapters, and I just gave up.
It was a great high for him.
Not the TV, not the miniseries.
Not the mini, no. Although for Tim Curry, that was a, but you know, it the book, it was a high for him. And then you've got, you know, he's had plenty of Children of the Corn.
That was a like 17-page short story.
I know, but it was
predictable and it was published in Penthouse, for God's sake.
Shit. But anyway, you've got that stuff. So I think that when it comes to books and literature, there have always been highs and there have always been lows. And you can talk about individual authors and when they hit a decline. But I think authors and books is one of those rare mediums where you can write a Christine 1 year and a Dark Tower series the next.
You know. Right. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm just saying, let's look at not a specific author, but overall, just from our lifetime, reading seemed to mean a lot more when we were kids than now, where now it just seems to be something like Twilight is accepted as good as, you know.
No, I have to respectfully disagree.
Okay.
Because I think reading... There are kids out there that I know where reading is just as much an escape into a fantasy world for them as it was for you and I. And there are a lot of kids, I think, that it's a quiet majority. When it comes to, you know, you've got Twilight, you keep holding up Twilight as if it's this...
It's one of the best-selling books in American history, and it's horrible.
It's a success. It's a successful series, but I don't even think those that are reading it are saying that it's good writing. In fact, I can tell you, nobody.
There are some, but like even like Jillian said, she read them because they were fun and easy.
Yeah,
not that they were good.
And that so I don't think you can hold them up. You know, I think that the lens of history will look back on Twilight, and that's exactly how they'll describe it: fun and easy, but not great writing.
It'll turn out to be the 70s or what Jacqueline Suzanne was in the 70s.
Exactly. Huh? And that's exactly what I think it's going to be. I think reading is one of those unique... It's a very unique medium because it is so ubiquitous and because it does rely so much on the individual to create the world. I think because reading relies on the individual to create the world using the theater of the mind, et cetera, I think that reading overall will not decline. There will be authors that will decline. There will be others that will climb up as greats. There will be those that will be recognized as Stephanie Meyer going great commercial success, shit writer.
Well, you know. Then, you know, sticking with the book thing, what about when, and this is not just an industry thing, but when the only thing you can find, at least commercially, in a genre is the garbage. I mean, there was a really dark time in the late 90s when good luck finding a science fiction book on the shelves that was not a Star Trek novel, a Star Wars novel, or a novel based on a horror franchise.
Yeah, and
you know, good luck finding anything that wasn't absolute... I mean, and I'm not trying to insult Star Trek writers and Star Wars writers, but most of you suck. Most of the stories suck. I'm sorry.
And I think you're right. You pick out a time and you go, look at this genre. It was crap.
Yeah, that was a dark time for sci-fi novels.
But it's dug its way out. And if you back up before the night, you know, we talked about it in our interview. You've got, you know, all of those great classic sci-fi writers back then that was great. And then it sucked and it's starting to get great again. And I have no doubt that eventually there will be, you know, three or four authors that will rise within sci-fi to be great, and then eventually it's going to be shit again in the meantime.
Well, I can speak to right now, the influence that Twilight had is decline. You go to any, and not just the youth section, you go to the horror section of Barnes & Noble right now, three quarters of that fucking thing is vampire love stories.
Yeah.
And you just go, oh my God, are we ever going to be able to climb out of this decline?
Well, let's go even more current. And let's talk about the romance novel.
Now, are we talking like the Fabio Harlequin shit? Yeah,
the Harlequin shit has always been shit, but it's been, I'm sure Jillian would describe, or someone like Jillian who liked romance would describe it as a fun and easy read. And yes, he, you know, took his purple manhood and violated her forest of moisture. And, you know...
Wow, that's some weird wordsmith in there, boy.
That is probably a direct
I've never
quote
read one of those, so
but you know, take a look at those and watch within these next few months. We had that amazingly successful S&M novel, Fifty Shades of Grey, came out, right?
Mommy porn.
Amazingly successful. I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that even within that Harlequin stuff, which has always been the great hero and the great tragic heroine and blah, 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 there's no doubt in my mind that whips and chains are going to find their way into Harlequin.
The romance stuff.
Yeah, and you're going to see it sprout. I mean, these things come in phases. So, like I said, when it comes to books, I don't think that reading on a whole will ever decline. I'm hopeful for that because I think that for every valley we hit, we're hitting a spike somewhere else, whether it's individual authors you're talking about, whether it's certain trends reading.
I'm not as optimistic as you.
I am because I know some kids, and even my little five-year-old nephew, Tony, loves reading what he can. And he's just, you know, he's just learning. He's learning how to read quite well, but you know, he loves it. And I think that it gives me hope. My little niece, Jenna, she's learning to read at this point, and she loves it. She loves it when mommy reads to her, or if Uncle Scott's in town, I read to her, and or we read together. And so that's why I think I'm hopeful that literature, for every valley that we're in, there's going to be a hill somewhere else.
Okay, it makes me look at the decline when I was at the bookstore, and I'm just walking down the aisle because you have to walk past the horror and the youth section to get to the comics, you know, to the trade paperbacks and stuff. And I'm just looking, and it's like vampire romance, vampire romance, vampire romance. Oh, zombie romance, vampire romance, vampire. It's like, oh my God, everything on the shelf is a fucking Twilight ripoff. And that also makes me wonder, the authors of these books, is it just one person that turns in the same screenplay and they do like autofill to change all the characters' names and they're the same fucking book basically?
No, you want to see something real similar to that? Go to the New Age section. And you'll find the one weird standout book there, or the diet section actually is even better. When Atkins got real popular.
Oh, I remember that shit.
You remember Atkins got real popular, and all of a sudden in the diet section you had tons of Atkins, you know. Atkins, kind of.
Well, and I've already heard, I'm sure because the 50 Shades of Grey thing just hit, so they haven't had a chance yet. I've heard that they're already starting, you know, every damn major publisher out there's got their 50 Shades of Grey knockoff coming.
Of course.
So I know that's coming. If it's not already there by the time this episode airs, it will be probably by Christmas. There'll be a 50 Shades of Grey style S&M love story book on the shelves.
I can tell you this much: when it comes to dealing with book dealers and stuff, again, working at the bookstore, I learned this. If it has sold, it will sell. That's what it is. And that's why you see so many knockoffs.
It just, you know, it kind of sickens me. And then you go to the sci-fi section and it's 900 different Star Wars novels and 400 different Star Trek novels. And you go, is there anything by an actual author that's not based on an established property anymore?
And eventually we'll have the next Asimov rise. Eventually.
I hope. The next Asimov or the next Ellison, I hope.
It will come. Give it time.
All right. So see us on Stitcher Radio. You can listen to the shows there. You can now, if you're going to shop at Amazon, go to 1201beyond.com and help us out a little bit. And the Adam and Eve stuff. And we're just plugging it here because we really need the help.
Well, we need to keep the
lights
on. I know
it kind of goes against what we said a little bit earlier, but
I mean, I've got my regular job that kind of keeps my lights on and will keep the show coming, but you don't.
And let us know if you think we are in decline or incline on this show.
Either way, I'm going to recline.
It's because you're an idiot.
No, it's because my office chair is broken.
And because you're an idiot and you continue to use it while broken.
I hate this chair.
Just stop recording. Good night.
Go and, that's it.
What?
That'd be perfect. That's what they can donate for. Get me a new office chair.
No, because I can't use that.
No, but I'll be comfortable. If you're my fan, help get me a new office chair. If you're Josh's fan, earmark the money for him, and we'll get him a pair of jeans that doesn't have holes in it.
Not a chance.
It'll happen.
Not a chance.
Yes, it will.
Not a chance.
Okay.
Night. So you have to click stop before save, dummy.
Oh, yeah, I do. Well, yeah, okay.